child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter.
Someday, yeah, we'll put it together and we'll get it undone.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to Naturalistic Support. I'm Arnel Doré, and attempting to join me on the air today is Elaine Durbach. Hi, Elaine, wherever you are. We can't hear her right now because we're having some technical difficulties, but hopefully we will solve those problems before the end of this program, and Elaine will join us. Meanwhile, it's just me. Naturalistic Support is a unique approach to lasting personal growth and healthier, more satisfying relationships. On this program, we help each other, combining a progressive understanding of our human experience with peer support. So that involves you calling us to talk about yourselves as well as to talk to each other. Our number is 212-209-2877. And today's topic is dealing with difficult people. People who are fortunate enough to have received healthy genes and the essential developmental support vital for the full expression of their human potential are most likely to be caring, kind, and cooperative. Unfortunately, the world has many people who have not been that lucky. As a result, we are all likely to encounter people who can be difficult to get along with at best and impossible to deal with at worst. Whether it's a coworker, a neighbor, or even a family member. Sooner or later, almost everyone will have to deal with a difficult person. So today we ask, is there a way to understand difficult people that can protect and empower us? So first, let's be clear about what we mean when we regard or describe someone as difficult. Psychologists consider someone difficult if they consistently behave in ways that are harmful to others. Most definitions of difficult people seem to distinguish between difficult people we may have to interact with at work, and difficult family members. Difficult people at work. Let's look at them first. In a workplace context, calling someone a difficult person generally means their behavior consistently creates friction, discomfort, or obstacles in social and professional interactions. In psychology and workplace management, the term typically refers to individuals who frequently violate social norms of fairness, mutual respect, or cooperation. It generally describes someone who is objectively hard to work with due to disruptive habits like sabotaging projects or spreading gossip. While the specific behaviors vary, a person is often labeled difficult if they display these recurring patterns: antagonism and aggression, which would translate from overt hostility to bullying to a bad temper that intimidates others; inflexibility, a refusal to adapt to change, accept others' ideas, or acknowledge personal mistakes. Is any of this sounding familiar yet? Lack of empathy, callousness, or a general disregard for how their actions affect the feelings and needs of others. Manipulation, using tactics like emotional blackmail, passive aggression, or guilt tripping to get their way. Grandiosity, an exaggerated sense of superiority or knowing it all. It often leads difficult people to dominate conversations or dismiss the expertise of others. The impact of being around difficult people can be multifaceted. There's workplace stress. Interacting with such individuals often leads to lower productivity, increased employee turnover, and emotional exhaustion. Psychological strain. Frequent conflict with difficult people is associated with physical symptoms like rapid heart rate and stomach cramps, as well as mental health issues like anxiety and depression. A feeling of walking on eggshells. Those around a difficult person often feel they must constantly monitor their own behavior to avoid triggering an outburst or conflict. So that's in relation to people that we encounter and deal with in the workplace. Is there anyone out there who's working with someone that these descriptions seem to pertain to? Call us at 212-209-2877 and tell us about your experience. Tell us about how you've been dealing with it, because goodness knows it is hard. In relation to family members, psychologists categorize difficult family members based on persistent behavioral patterns that disrupt emotional safety and family harmony. Now, occasional conflict is normal in a family. Family member, though, is considered difficult or toxic when their actions consistently undermine the well-being of others. Common traits that make a family member difficult include manipulative and controlling behaviors. Difficult family members often use emotional leverage to get their way or maintain a specific hierarchy. And some of the tools they'll employ includes guilt tripping, where they use previous sacrifices that they might have made or personal grievances to force compliance. It might include gaslighting, making you doubt your own reality, your memories, or perceptions. Or it might include resorting to a third party to create divisions or gain an ally instead of addressing an issue directly. Difficult family members will exhibit chronic negativity and be critical. They'll often drain energy by focusing on flaws or attacking others' self-esteem. And they'll be excessively critical, perpetually finding fault in your choices, your lifestyle, or achievements. And they'll always portray themselves as the wrong party, the wronged party, never acknowledging their part of a problem. And acknowledging that you have a role in a problem, you're part of a problem, is really empowering, and we'll talk more about that later. And they'll make backhanded compliments using sarcasm or subtle jabs to mock you while superficially appearing to be helpful. That's also, you know, a certain kind of aggression known as passive aggression, which we've spoken about in this program. If you have a difficult relationship with a family member and you're trying to deal with it, or you've been dealing with it, call us and tell us about it. We are at 212-209-2877. Tell us about the people in your lives that are difficult, which you might encounter at work, you might encounter in your family, or you might even just know them as neighbors, or they might be participating in some activity that you participate in, a sports team, or a club of some sort. Family members could also express that they can show their difficulty by violating your boundaries. A major sign of a difficult family member is their refusal to recognize your individual autonomy. They might disrespect your privacy, reading private messages, or showing up uninvited, or pressuring you to share personal information that you don't want to share. And also, emotional enmeshment. They might discourage your independence and expect you to absorb their emotional pain or be the primary source of their happiness. You know, I think we've all gone through this kind of thing in our parent-child relationships, and this can be very challenging for to experience either as a parent or a child. There's also volatility and unpredictability. So interacting with difficult people in your family can lead to a feeling of walking on eggshells to avoid an outburst. And there's emotional dysregulation. This is expressed as sudden explosive anger or landmines, where minor issues can blow up into major conflicts. Sounds like an aunt of mine who's no longer with us, and it's not completely a bad thing. The silent treatment. Sometimes in a family, a difficult person will use what's known as stonewalling, or withdrawing communication as a form of punishment. Again, if you've got a difficult family member and you've experienced dealing with any of these, tell us what it was like. Maybe you're experiencing it now. Maybe you know a good friend that has this kind of dynamic in their family, and they're trying to figure out how to deal with it, and maybe you can figure out how to be supportive. Call us at 212-209-2877. You know, when you call us, it not only can be helpful to you, but really helpful to other people who are relating to what you're saying, and they're going through a similar kind of thing. And when they hear somebody call in with it, It lets them know that they're not alone. So again, 212-209-2877. Family members who are difficult might also give love and support only conditionally. They may frame their affection as a reward for specific behaviors. So this breaks down to there's achievement-based love, which is only showing warmth when you meet their high or unreachable standard. And then there's revoking love, withdrawing affection if you disagree with them or set a boundary. Now, just in terms of this discussion, there is a problematic aspect to labeling a person. You know, if we call someone difficult, that is a complicated idea. Sometimes labels can interfere with our ability to see a situation clearly. For example, the label difficult person can easily be thrown out when someone's been angered or upset. Sometimes in the workplace, someone might be accused of being difficult unfairly because they raise tough questions or because they challenge the status quo. Other times, it simply means that two people have incompatible communication styles or expectations that haven't been resolved. Occasionally, the term will be wielded by a difficult person themselves for the purpose of manipulating others. So a difficult person might point the finger and call someone out for being a difficult person. So there are ways to approach the problem of a difficult person that is avoiding judgmental thinking, and that instead is built on empathy, humility, and kindness, all grounded in evidence-based insights from psychology and the field of conflict resolution. So let's talk about that, because that's what this program is all about, how we deal with difficult situations with empathy, humility, and kindness. So one principle is to listen to understand, not to correct. So that is also known as active listening. Reflecting, clarifying, and validating reduces defensiveness and de-escalates potential conflict. You know, research shows that people calm down when they feel heard, even when the disagreements continue. So you might say something like, it sounds like you're feeling frustrated because ... whatever. And you're gonna want to ask curious questions, which will give them a chance to say what they're going through. Humble inquiry. You're encouraging dialogue without being dominant or making assumptions. Open questions create psychological safety, and they invite cooperation rather than resistance. So an example of that would be, can you help me understand what matters most to you here? So, you know, that request is actually very reminiscent of nonviolent communication, which was developed by the psychologist Marshall Rosenberg, where you try to figure out what a person is actually requesting from you. What do they want? And you ask them to actually express their needs. You ask them to make a request. And when possible, you share your request with them. What matters most to you here? What are you concerned with? And that can go a long way toward getting two people to recognize each other in a way that otherwise they're talking past each other or talking around each other. Again, we're at 212-209-2877. Call us and tell us if you've gone through trying to mediate a situation with a difficult person, with a person that was in deep conflict with you, and how you got past it. Or maybe you handled it in a way that really didn't help at all, but now looking back, you recognize how maybe you could have handled it differently. We'd love to hear about that. Our number again, 212-209-2877. Non-judgmental thinking is a really important part of the solution to this conundrum. Name behavior descriptively, not judgmentally. Describing observable actions rather than assigning labels reduces shame and defensiveness. And this is an approach that's widely supported in conflict mediation and therapeutic communication. So, you know, you might say, you know, when our voices are raised, it's hard for me to stay engaged with you. You know, let's calm things down a little bit. Next, set clear, compassionate boundaries. So, an empathetic approach doesn't mean that you have to tolerate harm. Healthy relationships have kindness that is paired with firm boundaries in order to protect your well-being and prevent resentment. So you might say, I want to keep talking, but I need to slow this down a bit. So kind of trying to navigate a difficult conversation might include stepping on the brakes a little bit. Also, be compassionate to yourself. You have to try. Self-compassion reduces emotional flooding, and it allows you to be more patient toward others. So you have to recognize that this is a very stressful engagement that you're trying to navigate through. And just to be tolerant with yourself that, you know, it's not going to be easy. You're trying to do something very difficult. Look for shared values or goals. If you can highlight common ground, that can reduce an adversarial framing and increase cooperation. Even in situations that are polarized. So you might, you know, the obvious thing is we both want to see a constructive outcome from this. Let's, you know, kind of keep our eyes on that prize. Let's focus on that goal. How do we get there? But again, it's very important that you refrain from the judgmental thinking and the labeling, which I know is a little contradictory to talking about difficult people, but you know, that's one of the benefits of labels, is it's a shortcut to talking about things that we can share a common understanding about, but it's a dual-edged sword, because while it gives you ease of communication, it also completely eviscerates all the nuance and the subtlety that is also true. You know, sometimes the opposite of a profound truth isn't a falsehood, it's another profound truth. Our number is 212-209-2877. Today we're talking about difficult people. We're talking about the problems of using labels to think about people. But we are talking about behaviors that are harmful to other people and how we deal with people who behave in those harmful ways. And what might work, what doesn't work. Everybody's had difficult people in their lives. And, you know, we've all had it. So let's hear from you guys. 212-209-2877. And we've got a caller on the air right now. Let's get that. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling and where are you calling from?
Yes, hi. This is Dave. I'm from Queens.
Hey, Dave.
Yes, I have encountered numerous bosses who are really difficult. I thought very, I would say, cruel or even kind of inhuman. And my philosophy is to, you know, they say your enemy is your, you try to make friends or keep them close or something to that nature.
Yeah.
So what I would do is basically, since I didn't have any leverage or other people didn't have any leverage, so, you know, in this state, it's a, you know, you can do it if you have a conversation, as long as you're party to the conversation, you don't have to notify the individual. I would record them. I would get very friendly with them. They would open up and say things that could be very damaging to their career. And when it came time where they stepped over, you know, what I considered acceptable treatment of myself and other people, I would, you know, have a meeting with him alone or her, and basically notify them that, you know, show them my cards. And
wow, that must have been very, very intensive meeting there. I mean, did people blow up when they you know, heard that you'd been recording them? Did they explode? What happened?
Well, I would play them the best hits, if you know what I mean.
My goodness.
The relationship would change dramatically, and I would try to use the leverage or so-called my cards to change the dynamics of the relationship, and almost all the time it worked.
Dave, have you thought about making this into a limited Netflix series?
I mean, these days you have technologies like pendants or actually these things on the wrist, what do you call bands, that you would never know that they're constantly recording you. You can look in online, and nowadays, you know, you would never know you're recorded at all. But when the boss, you know, has very disturbing remarks about a female, a fellow employee, and goes into great detail about, you know, things that he should be saying, you know, that could be a career ender.
Yeah, for sure. So how would you break it to them? Would you say, look, I was pulling my hair out trying to find a way to talk to you about this, and I felt like I had no other options, so I recording you.
The way I would handle it is, I would, you know, have a VPN or a another account. I would send an email with a voice. What do you call it? I forgot what they call it. But basically, JPEG or something like that. And then
right.
Get it anonymously.
Right, an MP3. Yeah.
Yeah, nowadays it's not MP3, but
MP4 or whatever. Yeah, okay.
Whatever it is.
Yeah.
You get an anonymous email from a place that they couldn't detect or know where it came from. And then I would have this meet. Hey, can I mind if I came in and spoke to you? And I would say, did you get this, this email with this audio? I said, yeah, I did. Do you know who said it to you? I said, no, I don't. Well, I wonder, well, how do you know that I got it? Well, who do you think sent it to you? You know? And basically, I would detail, you know, so-called, you know, the need of change of dynamics in the relationship. You could do this to a family member. It's the best thing. They would never, you know, they would never know or just be able to detect, you know, your relationship.
And yeah, but have you noticed any after effects? I mean, were there any negative after effects where they did no longer trusted being themselves around you?
Well, negative as far as being disrespectful, treating employees like garbage. I sometimes I got a higher position that I didn't really deserve. And actually, they would want you to get out of their, you know, point of their view, and get you out of this office and get you a higher position in another office, another floor. You know,
wow.
You know, that's life. Life is about leverage. I mean, look at what's happening, unfortunately, now with these mafiosos with Venezuela. I mean, they could drown them. They could make their life a misery by, you know, basically holding him hostage.
Yeah. Dave, I don't want to go into the national scene, but your story is phenomenal, and I think you should write about it, because that, you know, it's not the average strategy that people employ, and you know, that's it's amazing that it's worked for you. Thank you for sharing that with us. We've got others on the line we got to get to, but thank you, Dave. And this is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling and where are you calling from?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes. Hey, say your name again and where you're calling from.
Yeah, how you doing? This is Ed.
Ed. Hi. From Jamaica, huh?
Yeah, what's going on? Happy New Year to you.
You too, Ed. So can you relate to our topic today?
Oh, yeah. I mean, as far as what you talked about, two aspects. As far as work, fortunately, in my line of work, it deals with, I basically work by myself a lot of times. And when I'm involved with a team pertaining to work, it's mechanical. So it's either yes or no. It's either right or wrong. There really isn't any ego tripping or things like that. I've dealt with individuals that do ego trip, but basically, for me, you got to take your feelings out of it. It's difficult. It is a practice that I had to develop. But once you can remove your feelings from it, if everybody is sincere as far as getting a job done, like you said, you can say, well, what are you trying to do? Well, what doesn't work for you? And you know, we're here to do the job. Let's get it done.
Yeah.
As far as family, that's a horse of a different color.
I mean, family's more complicated, isn't it?
Oh yeah. Well, you know, you don't choose your family. So there's individuals in my family that I think have fit into all of the personality aspects that you talked about. The plain people, the victim.
Yeah. right. Yeah. And that's difficult. I mean, have you ever been able to get past any of that with family members?
Sometimes you can't. I mean, to be totally honest with you, you might disagree with me, but I believe some people are just screwed up. You know what I mean?
There
are people in my family that are screwed up, and they like being screwed up. It's a point that gives them power, and you just can't let them get the power, you know? And then sometimes you just got to walk away. Sometimes you got to, hey, okay, you got it, and walk away and come back to it. You can't, you know, I mean, when it comes to family, there's emotions, there's feelings, there's points of view, there's history, and all of that comes. And it comes at moments when the family is together. And some people, we work through it. Some people, I can't deal with them. I can only deal with them to a certain extent. But with me, take your emotions out of it. You got it. Emotions are valid, but they're yours. Facts is one thing, feelings is another. And as long as you can learn to remove your emotions from a situation or de-escalate the emotions, you can work through it.
Thank you, Ed. That makes a lot of sense. Appreciate you sharing it with us. All right, my friend. I think we have one more caller on the line. Our number is 212-209-2877, and we are talking about dealing with difficult people in your life, whether they're in your family or your occupational encounters or in your neighborhood. Call us at 212-209-2877. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling and where are you calling from? Hello. Yeah.
This is Frank calling from Coscob, Connecticut.
Hey, Frank. How are you?
Good. I'm interested. I've been enjoying listening to other people's circumstances, and I had a unique and unusual, unexpected encounter with a very difficult person last year. I do construction management and architectural drawings, and so I'm hired to go onto job sites and, like, help with the design and help with the construction.
Yeah.
And there happened to be this house being renovated, and I was hired by the owner of the construction company. And what happened is they had never had a site manager before in their career. They always, I don't know who was in charge, probably the owner, but I was not introduced to anybody specifically to explain what he wanted me to do, what my place was. And I was trying to explain myself, but I was the only English-speaking person. Everybody was speaking Spanish, and I think the communication was very limited, but I think a lot of basic ideas got through. But what happened is, it turns out the leader of the subcontracting group that does all the woodworking and framing, apparently he's used to being the boss on all these job sites, and when I showed up, it was stepping on his turf. And so he started actually damaging my property and my tools on the job site.
Oh, man.
I'm 74 years old. I've been doing this since I was 20. I've never had anybody dare damage a tool of mine.
Yeah.
Excuse me. But
that sounds pretty awful.
And he would deny it. And then I asked the other guys on the crew who bent my shelf and threw it in the dumpster. They said, Eddie. Well, it was always Eddie, and Eddie kept saying, I don't know what you're talking about. And I said, well, finally, I called the guy who hired me. I said, look, you and I and Eddie have to sit down and get a clear understanding, because this is intolerable. And, you know, I'm about to, like, call the police, you know, on the damages, a couple hundred dollars of damages here.
Yeah.
So he said, he was afraid of Eddie. And he said, if you can't get along with Eddie, I'm going to have to take you off the job site. And I'm
Man.
Like, what? So I thought, you know, what a punk way of dealing with this. But anyway, I said, fine. I said, don't ever call me again for any work. I have no interest in working with you or your crews on any of your projects. We're done. And I said, I'm going back to the job site. It's going to take me a couple of days to get my tools off. And I went back to the job site, and the rule was, you know, if you don't own the tools, if you don't own the ladder or what you need, you go get it. And you use your equipment. You never use somebody else's. Well, these guys were just using all my stuff every day, just ignoring the rule. So I went back and I just said, get off. You know, I went to all his guys, get off my stool, get off my ladder, get off, put my table back where you found it. It took me like a half an hour just to, like, disarm everybody from all the stuff they were using that was mine. And then I went over to this guy, Eddie. He shows up. I said, you and I, when I get my stuff in my van, I said, you and I are going to go over there and talk. And he looked really nervous, and everybody around got nervous. So I got all my stuff in the van, and then I went over to him, and I pointed at him. I said, you over here now. And he came over, and I said simply, I'm going to talk. I'm going to say what I have to say, and then I'll listen to you. And I said, look, I've never said a bad thing against you. I've never done anything to disrespect you in any way. And I go, you know, I know your guys told me you're talking trash at my back and to the guy who hired me here. And I said, and I said, you act like a real punk. You're like 35 years old. You act like you're in junior high school. And I said, I'm done. I said, I'm off this job, and I'm never working for you or your crew or this guy again. So that's all I have to say. If you have anything to say, say it now. And he paused. There was this long pause. And he looked at me and he says, you made me feel stupid.
Hmm.
And I was shocked by that. And I said, what do you mean I made you feel stupid? I said, I've never done anything to, like, make you look bad. He just didn't understand a lot of things that I know from years of being in this trade. And he didn't understand just how I do architectural drawings, how I lay out and mark beams and boards, and just these little details that you learn along the way that help the job go along. But it was amazing to me. I expected all kinds of very physically uncomfortable and mouthy and loud and, you know, ugly language to be what I was going to encounter with him. And none of that happened. He just had that long pause. And I guess because I just told him how much I never disrespected him, it made him think. And I said to him, I go, before I left, I go, you know, Eddie, I go, I feel really badly for you. I said, I'll always find work. I'm very experienced. I'm not worried about work, this job, or any job. I go, but I really feel bad for you because I was willing to tell you anything and everything I know, and would be glad to, like, turn it over to you, because when I'm dead, it's gone with me. I said, I'd like to know somebody benefited from what I benefited from. I go, and that'll never happen. And I had a whole bunch of people that wanted work and needed framing. I was going to ask if you wanted to bid on these jobs, and I can't trust you, so I won't give you any of those opportunities either. I said, and I feel badly that I can't. Huh. It was just, I had never had encountered, he was a real bully, mouthy, you know, he had his little tattoos in his ear.
What made you not afraid? You know, the owner or the person you were working for said he was afraid of Eddie, but you weren't afraid of Eddie. Why was that?
Well, I've experienced jail in my life, and I've experienced being in the company of some very dangerous people. And I actually grew up in a very affluent community, but I was not an affluent kid, and I worked at country clubs and stuff. And since I was a little kid, I've always encountered bullies and had to deal with violent people and aggressive people. And I've always learned that. And I had an uncle who was a Marine. He said, it doesn't matter how big or how angry or how weaponized somebody is. He goes, if you can stand your ground and just stand solid when you're talking and not break up and not get too emotional and get out of control of yourself, he goes, basically you'll be more in control of what happens.
Yeah, that must feel great. I mean, it must feel good being able to confront someone like that. And you know, and it worked. I mean, he actually opened up to you in a way that I bet you could have never predicted.
Well, I mean, from every behavior he ever showed from the day I first met him, and I was on this job for 5 weeks, I think, 6 weeks, it was always consistent that he was a wise guy, a bully. He was the guy to fear. He was the guy that everybody laughed at, even though nothing he said was probably funny. But when I was a little kid, probably 7 years old, my neighbor was a little petty bookie in town. And his name was Mr. Lampy. Funny guy. Nice guy. And he told me, Frankie, you know, sometimes in school, the boys, they're going to steal your lunch of money and knock the books out of your hand. He goes, you say you may knock the books out of my hand or steal my money today. Tomorrow I come, I cut your balls off.
Yeah, I guess that's another way to deal with it. Frank, thank you so much for sharing all that with us. Really, really appreciate it. Interesting thing you had to confront there. Thank you, Frank.
Yeah. Well, thanks for your show. Always helpful.
Appreciate it. And we are at 212-209-2877. Give us a call. Tell us about your experience with difficult people. Not everybody handles things as bravely as Frank was able to handle things. I mean, sometimes when you're confronted with a bully, it can be very, very challenging. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back after this.
Listening to Naturalistic Support right here on 99.5 FM
WBAI New York. non-commercial, listener-sponsored
Peace and Justice Radio.
And we're back. We have another caller online. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling and where are you calling from?
Good afternoon, Arnan. This is Crystal.
Hey, Crystal. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for asking.
Yeah.
So I think we people give up on people too easy. When they have opinions about people, like, you know, people you so-called know and family and... I remember one time I asked my older sister, I had asked her a question about something, and she says, oh, that's because we spoiled you. Okay. but she's the oldest, so she had to take care of all seven of us. You know, I mean, she helped take care of us, because we did have parents. But she was the oldest child. And then I found out a lot later on that it was a burden. You know, she felt like, damn, I always had to be taking care of y'all, you know. But, people give up on people too quick. Like, you know, they'll say, well, like, people have given up on me. I can think of one or two people right now that have given up because they feel, it's her fault. Something she did, meaning me. But my thing is, okay, I may not feel like I was wrong most of the time. We should check ourselves to make sure, you know. But if you feel you wasn't wrong and stuff like that, why would you, you know, we're taught to give in and just, just say you did it just to shut them up and all kinds of here. But you don't just give up on people. Like, you give people, you know, at least that's how I, you know, and you have to listen. You have to start out listening in the conversation. And one real important thing I wanted to say, because I know I don't have much time. You look at politicians, you never see them out of character, right? That's why when they do stuff, it's always blown up, right? They're always calm and collective and all this kind of thing here. And they all try to personify that appearance because they don't want to look like a maniac or something like that. But it's all an act. And so they personify that look. They never let their voice get but to a certain tone. And all kinds of things. This is what a lot of politicians do. I'm a New Yorker, so I've been studying them for a while. They never wanted you to see them out of character.
Right, but in your personal life, Crystal, it sounds like you know what you were saying about like being dismissed as being like, oh, we spoiled you. I mean that's got to feel pretty awful, right? I mean,
it feels awful. When she said that. Oh, you know, you just, oh, we spoiled you. But I understand what she means, though, in a way, you know, I guess because I've always been taken care of. I can remember being, I can remember being in elementary school. My classmates took me to the store to buy me candy. So I've always been a leader, but what does that have to do with being spoiled? But anyway, I've always been like a leader type. People have always looked up to me.
Right? Yeah.
Even in elementary school. But that's why therapy is good, because the people don't know you. In therapy, they don't know you, so they can't come up with an opinion about you. They're there to listen and to share and things of that nature. So therapy is good on them.
Yeah, definitely. We'll leave it with that, Crystal, because I agree with you right there for sure. We got to get to another caller. Thank you, Crystal. And this is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling and where are you calling from? Hello.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year to you. My name is Ray. I'm calling from New York City.
Hey, Ray.
Hi. I've had the occasion of being bullied, so to speak. What you described earlier are all the traits of a narcissist. I'll give you my example of how I have dealt with narcissists. As a teenager, I took martial arts for a while, and my teacher, very noble man, this was in the neighborhood. There was another fellow that didn't know my teacher was a third degree black belt. And he confronted my teacher one day, my martial arts teacher, and he wanted to fight him. And to my surprise, I heard my martial arts teacher say to this bully, it's your world, champ. I'm only trying to live in it for a little while. I hope you will allow me that time. Well, I took that, and I took that later on to my job. When I'd be bullied at my job, I would tell that person, it's your world. I'm only trying to live here. I'm just a visitor. And I found it worked. And I asked my martial arts teacher later, why did you do that to that guy? You could have made mincemeat out of him. And he told me, he said, sometimes you have to take low if you know who you are to continue on to a higher plane. Thank you for taking my call. Have a good day.
No, I really appreciate that. Yeah, narcissism is definitely an epidemic in a way. It's defined as an exaggerated sense of self-importance, entitlement, and a lack of empathy. Here's a clip about narcissism from the mental health website PsychHub.
When it comes to narcissistic personality disorder, or NPD, these are some of the most notable and defining symptoms. A grandiose sense of their own importance, shown by a tendency to exaggerate or brag about achievements and attempt to impress others or seem superior. A need for significant amounts of attention and admiration from others. A lack of empathy, or being unable or unwilling to consider or acknowledge the needs and feelings of other people. In addition, people may have unrealistic fantasies about or high opinions of their own status. Beauty, talent, intelligence, and ability to achieve fame, fortune, and power. They may also have an unrealistic or idealized standard for love. This could be related to a belief that they are special and of high status, so only people and organizations who are also special and high status can relate to and associate with them. People living with NPD may have a sense that they are entitled to special treatment or have unrealistically high expectations of people and situations. They tend to take advantage of and even harm other people in order to get their own needs met. They may be envious of others and convinced that others are envious of them, and can come off as arrogant or haughty. No one person's experience is the same. Some people also experience anxiety and mood swings and other mental health disorders. Those around them may note that their ideas and needs may vary or contradict themselves. There are numerous factors that can contribute to the development of the disorder. Some that have been proposed are genetic factors, innate personality traits, and certain childhood experiences. These experiences could include abuse, rejection, or even being overly praised and admired for being special. NPD is one of the most stigmatized mental health disorders, mostly due to how the impairment of interpersonal and social skills impacts the people around them. However, it's important to remember that at the core of someone's internal experience, they may feel empty or numb, have intense feelings of shame, self-hate or worthlessness, and immensely painful past experiences. Having the same level of respect and compassion towards those experiencing this disorder that you would have for someone experiencing any other mental illness is vital to destigmatizing this disorder and paving the path towards more people getting the care they need.
So that's about all we have time for today. I'd like to remind everyone that you could still support Naturalistic Support by becoming a WBAI buddy in the name of our program. And you could do that for as little as $5 a month by going to buddy.wbai.org. That's buddy.wbai.org. And you've been listening to Naturalistic Support's look at dealing with difficult people. I'm Arnel Del Rey, and joining me today was Elaine Durbach, except she couldn't get through. So sorry about that. Hopefully next time. Thanks to our patient engineer, Red Johnson, and to Hilla Weiss for her support. Tune in again next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for another edition of our program. Archived editions of Naturalistic Support can be found on our website at wbai.org and at equaltimeforfreethought.org. And stay where you are, because coming right up is the Katie Halper Show. Hi to my foster mom, Marilyn, and remember, always try to be kind, because you never really know what someone else is going through.
Come on, people now, smile on your brother, everybody get together. We'll be right back.
is but a song we sing. Fears that we will die. You can make the mountains ring or make the angels cry. Though the